Welcome, everyone, joining us here tonight on the Kings County Radio Club's Technical Question and Answer Net. I am Roy, AC2GS, and I will be your net control operator for this informal net. I will be your host, and William, AC2ZV, will be my co-host on this exploration into amateur radio technology. The purpose of this net is to provide a platform for discussion and to offer our answers, as well as promote a conversation among all participants of this net. The club maintains an archive of these technical nets on its webpages, and we also offer original articles and reviews on many topics covered during these technical nets. We also publish technical puzzles for our participants to ponder, and as a starting off point to discuss important technical concepts. Tonight's TechNet puzzle is posted on our club's website, and the link can be found on the front page of our website in orange color type, but if you would like a simple URL to find it, you can just type puzzle.kc2rc.com. Also, we will be offering a streaming service for those who cannot receive our repeater signal. Just point your browser to stream.kc2rc.com. We also have an Echo Link node available for use. Just point your Echo Link application to the node kc2rc-r. This net is scheduled for the second and fourth Wednesday of each and every month, and all of this information can be found on our club website, which is www.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club, and an application is always available on our website. No question is too simple. No question is dumb. All wisdom begins with the asking of questions. If you have a question, it deserves to be answered. Our format tonight will be to ask for participants to check in only if they have questions or comments for this net. Please give us your first name, your call sign, whether you have a question or a comment, and the net will then address each question in order. I will try to provide a cogent answer, and William AC2ZV will join in as well. If any other listener has any further facts or opinions, they will be free to break in with the word comment, and when recognized, offer their knowledge or experiences to us all. If anyone has any suggestions for future topics of interest, please let us know either here on the technical net or our email address, which is tech@kc2rc.com. And now I would like to introduce my co-host for this net tonight, William AC2ZV. Good evening, William.
Good evening, Roy. Sorry it's a little late. It takes a while to get clicked in on the Echo Link, but I'm here and ready to go. Let's see if anybody's out there with some questions.
Well, hello, William. I got a couple of little problems here on the audio. I guess I'll figure it out at some point or another. Anyway, once again, I am AC2GS. This is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. If anyone has any questions or comments for tonight, please hit that push to talk. Give us your first name and your call sign.
Okay, Roy, I don't hear anybody out there, so I got a question for you.
Okay, what's your question for me?
So anyway, I was thinking about, how to maybe get a wider range out of the sessions. And it seems like if we're streaming it, we're certainly going out, but we're not getting any incoming method. And so last night, Max was talking about the possibility of setting up a Discord account and for the club. And he was going to set up a Discord account, and somehow we'd be able to communicate with each other over bulletin boards. And I think that's pretty much in real time. So what do you think about that?
Well, we talked about that last Wednesday. We talked about that during the general meeting. I suggested that, well, it basically was the premise for my annual smoke signal comment, that we all have different preferred methods of contacting each other. One guy would like to use Facebook, another guy would like to use Twitter, another guy would like to use cell phone text, another guy would like to use email. And that I'm sure if I looked around, I could find some guy who really wanted to send and receive smoke signals as a way to collect the messages back and forth. I think that some of the guys under 30 would enjoy Discord, and I think it would intimidate most of the guys in their 50s, 60s, and 70s. who tolerate computers, but aren't particularly fond of them. So I don't mind another method of communicating. I just don't think it's going to be as universal as I think it was suggested to Maxim by some people during the Winter Field Day, who, again, were under 35. So, you know, different ages stratified to different methods of communication. I have nothing against it. It's just I've gone through this a few dozen times with all the other past social app type of situations to failure. I mean, I set up forums on the websites. We set up mailing lists. We kind of did everything that you could do back then. So I'm not terribly optimistic, but I have nothing against it.
Well, I'll be interested to see if anybody uses it, because we're getting less and less participation on the nets, you know, and I was hoping that we were going to have a lively group, but it seems like there's not much going on, and people aren't really participating very much. So I don't know what the deal is. I think that AI is taking over everybody's consciousness, but it's very strange what's going on, and seems like not very many people are looking at ham radio anymore. Even ARES is very hit and miss.
Well, I don't think I would blame it on AI. The majority of our club members are probably between the ages of 60 and 80, and I don't see too many of them having long-winded chats with ChatGPT. I think that amateur radio, there are some people who live and breathe it. There are others who it's an interesting hobby. There are others that kind of fluctuate in and out of it. A lot of club members, unfortunately, seem to be in an amateur radio-related malaise. They're not really actively pursuing it. If they have it plugged in, they might use it, but they might not. They'd probably rather watch television or a movie, maybe even read a book. I don't know. And I think that's what's going on. It's just this, I don't think it's modern-day technology that has them distracted so much as the rest of their life. And unfortunately, that's the nature of things. Even active amateur radio operators have kind of seasons where there are some times that they're much more active than other times. And again, I think, unfortunately, here in Brooklyn, a lot of people have other things that they'd rather do. And that ends up with poor participation on this technical net, poor participation on the info net, poor participation on the 10-meter net. And, you know, how to get people interested again, that's the million-dollar question. I don't think a Discord server is going to do it again, because I think if you ask the average person over 50 or 60 what a Discord server is, they would just shrug at you. But I could be wrong.
Yeah, I'm kind of put off by the name initially, so it doesn't, for me, it would take me, the club having to get a channel, that's the way I'd sign on to it. I haven't seen that much of interest there yet. Anyway, let's see if anybody's out there with a question. I know Max is supposed to tune in and ask you some stuff about his antennas, but he probably can't get the kids to sleep, so we got to keep it up for a while.
Well, I will try my best, but, you know, I mean, well, at least I have you. It's much easier to have a dialogue with two people than with one person. I could share with you the Limark Technical Nets puzzle from last Sunday, if you didn't hear it last Sunday. I would hope to have at least a couple of listeners out there to kind of join in the concept of, see, we have a different type of puzzle over at Limark. I don't do we have our puzzle here that's more technical questions with multiple choice answers. The type of TechNet puzzle I have over at Limark is more novel concepts that people don't think about, and so when it's revealed to them, they either say aha or they say I don't believe that. So maybe I'll share that with you.
Okay, well, we'll try that out in a few minutes. One thing I noticed about the 10-meter net, I could hear the guys from Nebraska pretty good when you were talking to them. I don't know if they could have heard me, but I got a relay from somebody. I don't know if he was local or not, but it seems like for the 10-meter net, it's probably more like we're going to get more distant people than club members anyway. Don't you think that's what happens on 10 meters? Because the ground wave is rough for people in the local area.
Well, this is the sunspot active period. When the sunspots go away, you lose all the DX stations. And the farthest you could talk, occasionally you might get someone on the East Coast, usually Southeast Florida or one of those coastal states. But mostly it's a little bit of New Jersey, a little bit of Staten Island, a little bit of Queens, and a lot of Brooklyn. But in the old days, you could kind of bet on at least 5, 6, maybe 7 people in Brooklyn. Now you're lucky if you get 2 people in Brooklyn. And for the most part, it's more of a hello, how are you? That's nice. I'll see you. Goodbye. So it's not like they stick around that much either. So again, it's more just the seasonal variations and the way that the local our club members, you know, if you ask them, I'm sure they would say on a theoretical basis, yes, I would like the 10-meter net to continue. If the following question was, would you be willing to actually spend any time on it? Probably, if they were truthful, the answer would be no. That happens a lot for a lot of different things. Way back, I asked people if they wanted a newsletter, and of course, they all said, yeah. So I gave them a full-fledged newsletter like the Lunatic. Actually, it was 8 pages every month, and I asked for help, and they suggested I plagiarize other newsletters from other clubs, one in Hawaii that specialized in volcano safety aspects, and I kind of yelled at the guy and said, do you think anyone in Brooklyn is afraid of a volcano anytime soon? And I folded it into the abridged version of the newsletter, which is now only, I think, 2 pages long. But again, you ask people if they'd like a newsletter. Yeah, sure. Ask them if they even want to read the damn thing. I had one guy who was the president at the time and said that, you know, it's a shame that no one reads my newsletter because I put it out every week, which I had to tell him that, no, I put it out once a month. So I don't know. I don't know a solution to this problem.
Yeah, I don't either, but I sure do appreciate the work that you do being our secretary. I think that it's great. One of the topics that came up on Tuesday, you know, was that, you know, we're all missing Howie already. And I know you miss him on the 10-meter net, and we miss him on the 2-meter net as well. So we found out Joe, AC2AE, checked in, and he said that they're doing this big memorial for him in that in their Fusion net. And I tried to figure out how it would be possible to maybe dial in to their net with a cell phone, but it doesn't appear to be possible. So anyway, I'm going to miss that. But it's interesting that, you know, so many people just end up becoming silent keys, and we get to be a smaller and smaller community. It's good to have people like Max. Maybe he's online.
This is KD2VA. Yes, I am on and listening.
Well, Roy promised us a puzzle from the other tech net, so I'm interested to hear about what it is. So let's have that.
I mentioned that in the write-up that I sent everyone the notice that Howard had passed away. I mentioned that that Joe AC2AE was going to do a memorial this Thursday night on his Fusion net. I mentioned the gateways. I mentioned all that. Now, William, if you happen to have an Android phone, I think there's an application called DroidCom. I think DroidCom is the name of it. That might let you get into one of the gateways that Joe uses for his Fusion net.
Yeah, he told us about that, but he also said he was going to send me some information, but I've got an iPhone, so that's not going to work for me, so I'm out of luck there. Anyway, that's my situation.
Okay. Yeah, I understand that. The guy who wrote DroidCom originally had a beta he was working on that was running on iPhones because I downloaded it. but he let the beta lapse and he didn't update it and he didn't publish a final version. So as far as I'm aware, you're out of luck as far as using iPhone to get into any of the gateways. The only real way that I know of, other than the Android phone, is to use some kind of a hotspot technology, you know, because I think he has both Fusion gateways and DMR gateways and D-Star gateways. So the trouble is, you know, you need a hotspot to jump into them.
But don't you also need to have a digital radio to hit the hotspot with the digital radio so that it can go in? Isn't that the other part that you need?
Yeah, you don't have anything that works digitally. You don't have a Fusion radio or any other digital technology. Most of the club members ended up having a Fusion radio at least. So all your radios are analog?
Yeah, the radios are pretty much all analog. I guess it's digital inside the Beifong and stuff like that. But I'm one of the hobby guys. I'm not the gung-ho guy. So I joined a club to play around with the radio and meet everybody in the club and use the radio a little and keep my hand in the ring and learn about radio. And
okay. I mean, you know, there are still kind of ways around it. There's a program for PCs called BlueDV. You have to buy a digital dongle for about $100 to because he wants to do it legally. You could steal the software, and there are people out there who've done it. But this particular guy doesn't charge anything for his software and doesn't want to break any rules. So I have the software. Again, it's called BlueDV. You could Google it. But in order to get it to work, you got to get yourself an Ambi chip, a dongle that plugs into your computer's USB port. But yeah, I mean, that's the, you know, there are pluses and minuses to digital mode. The plus, I'm sure Joe would tell you, is that you could talk all over the world. And, you know, he, at times when he used to do reports about it during the general meeting, he would mention that he had check-ins from the Philippines. The downside is that it doesn't operate on RF locally. We don't have a link to it, and so the only way that you can really get it these days is through some kind of internet stream. So I'm sure the people there are very familiar with Howard. He was there every Thursday night doing what he usually did, giving the weather. So I'm sure they'll do a very nice memorial for him.
Yeah, I agree. And anyway, that's about all we had chatting about last night. So back to net control.
Okay, very good. Well, once again, I am AC2GS. My name is Roy. This is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net, and we're here for questions. If anyone has any out there, please feel free, hit that push-to-talk button, and say your piece.
Hey, Roy, this is KG2VEA, Max.
Yes, Max. Can I do anything for you today?
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. I'm being a little bit lazy today. I need to do a couple of things on my laptop. I'm going through EchoLink. Thank you for setting that up. Not making my usual radio. But I wanted to ask a couple of questions about potentially identifying troubleshooting my antenna issues. So I was letting you know that I got a G90. I tried listening. Got a little bit more than just usual noise. But I do think my antennas need improvement. So two-parter kind of to discuss. One is, how do I take a look at my two antennas? One is a dipole. One is a end-fed, and try to identify what the issues are. And the second question is, like, if that's too damn problematic, any recommendations for an antenna that I can purchase so I can actually get some kind of connectivity?
Okay. The easiest way that I know of to check if an antenna is functional is to use a vector network analyzer. In the old days, that was asking a lot because originally, when they were first introduced to commercial channels, they were tens of thousands of dollars and weighed 50 pounds. They have shrunk and gotten a lot cheaper. When I got into the hobby, you could get an intro with, you know, a HF range type of VNA for about $300-$400. Now you can get them for about $80. I hate sounding like I'm selling them off of the back of my truck, but nano VNAs, they come in different size screens. If you want to pay the least, you get the 2.5-inch diagonal screen. If your eyesight is going on you, you might consider the 4-inch diagonal. You could get SMA connectors for them, or you can get Type N connectors, which I prefer. They're bigger and sturdier and such. That would be the easiest approach I could see, because then you could just plug in your antenna, sweep your impedance, and if you don't see something close to a one-to-one impedance at some range of your antenna, then it's not resonant and it's not going to work. And you have to consider why the heck it's not resonant. You could also extend the range of the sweep, and you might find out that it's resonant, but it's resonant at 18.3 megahertz, which isn't going to get you very far. So, I don't know if you're inclined to, but if you haven't gotten a nice little nano VNA, you might want to consider it.
So I actually do have one, and at least like I was trying to tune both antennas with that, and haven't tried it again. But on a dipole, I thought I got like a 2 to 2.3 WR, but when we tested it during field day with a real antenna analyzer, was infinite, meaning it was dead. And then the end fed was supposed to be able to get down to I believe 2.3 SWR, and when we were testing it during the field day, I was getting like 5 to 6 SWR. So that's just kind of really weird. But I think you're right. I think I need to basically take the nano VNA and test it out. But so kind of like, let's say I get like at a 3 or 4, and shortening or lengthening the length of the wire isn't helping. How do I go about identifying if there's a problem with the way I put the end fed together, or if the balun is dead on the dipole? Like, how do you go about identifying the actual defective equipment besides like, well, the SWR is off?
Well, I think the most important thing to do is judge whether you have, does it kind of sink into, when an antenna is resonant, it kind of sinks to a low number. If it's designed reasonably well and, you know, nothing's kind of wonky, it should be close to a 1-to-1, a 50-ohm impedance. If you still have a resonant valley, you know, where it's high and then at the near the frequency that you want to use it for, it dips down to its lowest impedance, and then past a certain frequency it goes up, you could consider just getting a regular antenna tuner to tune it down closer to a 50-ohm impedance. It would be perfect. It would be better if it was naturally 50-ohm, but there might be something strange about your balun. These baluns are supposed to be 64-to-1 or 49-to-1, but in some frequency ranges, they're not as good with the impedance transformation, so they may need a little help. There's a lot of things that interact with the resonant impedance of an antenna. A lot of it is ground coupling. In a perfect universe, I tell you to raise your antenna as high as you possibly can, and that could only help your situation. But you know, in the metropolitan area, that's a big thing to ask for people. So you try and raise it above ground as much as you can. You try and isolate it from coupling, especially to the ground or to other metal objects nearby. And the rest of the way, if you can't get the impedance down to 50 ohms, you try and fool it with an antenna tuner.
So I guess here's the question about antenna tuner. Let's say the antenna is bad or dead. No antenna tuner is going to help, probably, in that case, right? But an antenna with SWR of 5 to 1, even an antenna tuner is going to tune it, I'm still not going to get the kind of reception or transmission that I'd like. Is that true?
Yes, that's true. It won't give you the best, but it won't give you the worst either. Now, you're going to get a lot of argument if you ever find yourself on 75 meters. Because one of the bones for contention is whether an antenna tuner is useful or just a silly thing that people use to fool both their transmitter's final output stage and the ham. You will get some additional loss. Antenna tuners introduce loss unless you had yours designed by the Jet Propulsion Labs for millions of dollars. And, you know, they're all gold and silver and superconducting materials and whatnot. But, and you'll get reflections back. It will change the phase of the transmitted signal and allow the antenna to act somewhat resonant. The trouble is it'll reflect back and forth a few times, and the attenuation loss of your transmission line becomes a bigger and bigger factor. So you might not be able to push 100% of your signal through the antenna tuner, but if you can push 60% of it, that's 60% more than you can if you don't try. So I think antenna tuners are useful. You can fool yourself completely with some antenna tuners. I make a joke that I have a PAL star and I could probably tune a doorknob. I don't think a doorknob would make a great radiating antenna, although I've mentioned before there was this guy who decided he was going to show off. He took a 100-watt light bulb, put it on a 5-foot lamppost, a fence post, and he got a worked all state certificate. So where there's a will, sometimes there's a way.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. You're saying it's kind of like fools the radio and fools the operator. Like every time I hear about what the antenna tuner does, it does kind of feel like it's basically matching impedances. But, like, it doesn't change the impedance of the antenna. Therefore, I think there's going to be a lot more dissipation heat. But I don't know, not about this. But yeah, you gotta play around with the antenna. So my antenna situation is this: I built a dipole with the 9-to-1 Balun, I believe was the Balun, which I don't know if I did well because that was like something I looked up on the internet before I even knew guys. Then I got a kit from ARRL and put together a 49-to-1 Balun and an embedded antenna from a kit. Two kits that I put together. I'm not sure if that's a good idea. And then I got a 10-meter hemsec, which I could hear stuff a little bit, but it's a little compromised. Plus, I never actually believe in it myself. So if I had to get an antenna that I can work with, what would you recommend? I think somebody was recently telling me Pac-12, something like that. So what do you think?
Okay. I don't know exactly what a Pac-12 is. I think we lost something in the translation. There's a lot of different options. The simplest approach is you take some wire and you measure out a 10-meter, you know, that the old 268 divided by frequency, and you cut two dipoles and you hang them as high as you can. If you want to buy one, I really like my Serio 5/8 wave vertical. It's not terribly big. It's sturdy, and it's fixable when things collide on top of it, which unfortunately happened to me. Hamsticks are necessary evils. They're not that god-awful in 10 meters. As you get to the lower and lower frequencies, the inefficiencies of hamsticks become ridiculous. The inefficiency of, say, something like an 80-meter hamstick is probably about it's about 2% efficient. It's 98% inefficient. I don't know. It depends on how much of an optimist. I'm not that much of an optimist, although you might get away with 10 meters. But it's certainly suboptimal. In a home type of environment, you could probably find enough space to put a full-size half-wave, quarter-wave, five-eighths wave type of radiator, and that should give you a decent signal. So, it depends on if you want to buy something pre-made. I would take a look at the Serio 5/8 wave. If not, cut some dipole and try that out and see what happens.
Yeah, let's try my first antenna. I think this dipole. With a dipole, would you use it with a Balun or without one? Just an unun. You'll use an unun.
No, it wouldn't be an unun because what's going on? A dipole is a balanced antenna. You're connecting it to a coaxial a transmission line, which is an unbalanced transmission line. So you would need a balanced to an unbalanced. Could you get away with it? Sometimes you can. I did an article, I'm sure I put it in the newsletter, but it was years ago, of what can go terribly wrong if you decide to skip the Balun. It depends upon the length of the transmission line. There are lengths of transmission line where you won't get bad common mode reflection. And then there are other lengths where you'll get a lot of common mode reflection. So, you know, if the old Clint Eastwood line, if you feel lucky, you might want to go without a ballon. I would not recommend it. You don't necessarily have to have a true transformer one-to-one ballon. You can use basically an RF choke, an ugly ballon, a bunch of ferrites one after the other, or get a toroid ferrite and loop near your feed point the transmission line a few turns around it to give a good RF choke. But you should have some kind of RF choke near the feed point of your dipole. It doesn't cost that much, and it makes things less problematic.
Interesting. So actually, I was just realizing what I said, though, I probably need a one-to-one ballon, right? Not a 9-1.
Yeah, you need just a one-to-one because the impedance of a dipole in the center is 50 ohms. So you don't need to transform it. If you were going to use an off-center dipole, as you move it away from the center, the impedance goes up. So if you were going to do some kind of a Wyndham off-center, you would then benefit from a 4-to-1 because around those ratios, you end up with a 200-ohm impedance. If you go all the way to the end, in the case of your end-fed, on a theoretical basis, you have an infinite impedance. But because we don't live in a theoretical world, it's only about 2 or 3,000 ohms of impedance. That's where the 64-to-1 or the 49-to-1 works out to be the best under those circumstances.
Got it. Yeah, I was remembering some of the stuff I read. So I guess you can do without a ballon if you have a ladder line. Other than that, you kind of need one. Cool. Yeah, I got that down and actually test these antennas and just try to figure out what's going on. But I was just thinking about it. The antenna I'm talking about, the PAC-12, is actually a Chinese clone of the JDC-12 made by, not sure who it's made by, but Southern DX Engineering. But that's the one we use during Field Day and works pretty well, surprisingly well.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Chinese antennas, I'm a little ambivalent about. I had a friend who was obsessed with magnetic loops, and he bought a Chinese very, very inexpensive magnetic loop in which the loop material, which is best to have the lowest possible resistance. That's why some people will have these large surface area, bent copper pipes. The Chinese used a thin stainless steel, which is not very conductive, wire as the loop. So I don't know. I mean, it certainly was inexpensive. I don't think he was that thrilled with it technically, so he ended up making his own. Just to touch back on what you said earlier, if you use a open line, open lines tend to be higher impedances, whereas the coaxial cables that we use are 50 ohms impedance, and the ones that the cable company use are 75 ohm impedance. Open line can be 600 ohms, 450 ohms, 150 ohms. It sort of depends on the diameter, the dimensions of the open wire, the distance between them and such. So theoretically, you could use, instead of a 4-to-1 ballon on a off-center dipole, you could use an open line that's 400 ohms impedance. But then you're still stuck at the other end of the transmission line. You're going to try and stick a 200 ohm impedance transmission line into a transmitter that's hoping for 50 ohm impedance output. So you're going to end up needing a 4-to-1 ballon for the other side of the circuit when it gets down to the transmitter.
Yeah, that kind of makes sense. Cool. I got to find some time to dissect these antennas. To be honest, I think what happened with the dipole is that it used to be resonant, and then I think I was messing with this. I made a rookie mistake. I got the antenna wire, which is just open copper wire, and it's hard. well, not that hard, but it's not, still not like soft laminated cover, because I thought, oh, it's an antenna, so it must be unshielded, meaning that it doesn't have any plastic coating on it. And that was a mistake, obviously, now that I know about it. So I might have broken off somewhere. I just got to check the connections, maybe open the balun, make sure that nothing broke there. It was pretty bad when we were doing the antenna analyzer. And again, to be honest, if I can get that to work, given my antenna situation, it will probably be my bet. Or going outside, that's my next thing. But that's where I probably would want to get my antenna working. That's, I think, the low profile that I can take outside.
Okay. I mean, you kind of never know until you test these things out and see how they work. And some of these things surprise, you know, guys who've been in this hobby for 50, 60 years. You know, there are some times that a person is stuck and they have to kink a piece of wire right, left, and then left, and then right, and it looks god-awful. But they turn it, they plug it into the radio, and, you know, they talk to Switzerland or something. So over in Limark, Dick K2RI, W, who's a silent key, used to tell a story of a guy who would regularly check into his technical net. He had this antenna that was basically sitting on the ground, which is the absolutely worst place you could put an antenna. And yet, somehow, he was able to make contacts through it. So, you know, sometimes the antennas don't read the theory book, I guess.
Yeah, it feels a little bit magical, to be honest with you, but I'm going to try to figure it out at some point, because now that I have this shiny new radio, I need to make sure it actually works. But now that it is a portable radio, I can attach to an antenna, to a battery. I have a couple of, it's only 20 watts, I can take it outside and try it out. It should be interesting. I wouldn't dare attaching the Kenwood radio that I had before, that it draws 100 watts, but everything I'm blown up on of these batteries. So it would be cool to try something for the future. Curious about the puzzle, though.
Okay, which puzzle are you alluding to? I mentioned earlier that if people were interested and they hadn't heard my, I have a TechNet puzzle for the Limark technical net that's different than ours. So you could choose from either, yeah, or both. The puzzle that I put up, I don't think is a difficult one to kind of figure out. But it's amusing. The one that I gave the poor guys at Limark, an electrical engineer had serious doubts about me and my answer. So I, to this day, he probably still doesn't believe me. So, you know, the TechNet puzzle for Kings County, I'm sure he would agree very quickly and easily with me about it.
Honestly, I'm not even sure if I know the answer to the KCRC puzzle. I'm looking at it right now, I'm reading through it, like, I'm not really sure the answer here. But I'd be interested to hear the Limark one as well.
Okay, I'll give you the Limark one first. And then we'll fall back to the Kings County Radio Club. I told people that for the most part, most of the people listening to me on that TechNet, and probably this TechNet, have this tool in their house and use it at least semi-regularly. It operates at supersonic velocities. It's not radiation, so it's not RF, it's not light, it's particles, it's matter that travels faster than the speed of sound. So anyone want to hazard a guess what that implement is?
Can you repeat the whole thing? I didn't really follow.
I say it's electric toothbrush.
Okay, let me try again. Most of us, most hams, have among our box of things that we use a implement that operates by pushing out something faster than the speed of sound, Mach 1. So it's supersonic. So the question is, what is this object that most of us have and most of us use regularly? I happen to have this object about 2 feet away from me as I speak right now, and I have others scattered about the house.
Well, you don't have a lot of toothbrushes sitting around, so obviously my answer was wrong. Let me think about that. Max, let's have a guess from you.
I mean, I guess the question is, are we talking about physically pushing out? Because I guess, like, radio waves travel faster, right? And down, but I'm not sure if we're talking about that. I mean, anything, any kind of screen that produces light, that travels via the light, well, that's faster, but I don't think we're talking about that. I am kind of curious what that would be.
Yeah, like I said, this is not any form of radiation. This is matter.
Well, I have a supersonic jewelry cleaner, but I don't think that's what you're talking about.
I'm not sure that you have a supersonic cleaner. You have an ultrasonic cleaner, which isn't about the velocity of things. It's about the frequency of things. It's simply sound waves that are faster than, I don't know, 40,000 hertz or something. But I think that's what you got.
Yeah, it's an ultrasonic. Whatever this thing is, somehow something is going faster than the speed of sound. I'm not getting it, so I'm sure it's going to be an aha moment when you tell us what it is, but it's not like a loudspeaker, obviously. You have a lot of those sitting around the house, I'm sure, but would that go faster? I don't know. Maybe it does go faster than the speed of sound, which is why it can push out the sound. Weird guess, but I don't know.
Okay, a sound transducer only puts out sound at the speed of sound. That's why it's called the speed of sound. So it doesn't go faster than the speed of sound. So, I don't know if you're going to bang your head and say, oh, of course. The electrical engineer over at the other technical net kind of said that he doesn't think so. Hopefully he will look at the sources that I offered him and change his mind next Sunday night, but I don't know. So once again, I pretty much I'll give you a couple little extra hints. You can hold it in your hand. It weighs usually a couple of ounces, and they're disposable.
I mean, tell me it's not a stapler. That can't be right.
No, staplers that I don't believe go faster than the speed of sound. I guess theoretically, if you were very talented, you might be able to press it very, very fast, but I would tend to doubt that.
Well, if something goes faster than the speed of sound, that means that it breaks the sound barrier, which means that it would probably make a loud noise, go bang. So maybe there's some object that we have that we don't think is very much of importance that easily goes bang when you push a button or you do something. So it's got to be something simple like that, because if you go faster than the speed of sound, you're definitely going to make a bang. So is that on the right track, Roy?
It's nearby. What some people wanted to promote for an answer, and it sort of is, except that it doesn't meet all the criteria, is a whip. You can theoretically, when you snap the end of the whip, it's a supersonic phenomena. The problem is not many people that I know have whips, and it's a significant skill. Not any schnook can snap a whip well. So it doesn't necessarily have to have a loud boom. It's a function of surpassing the speed of sound, but it's also the amount of material that does it, that determines the amplitude of the sonic noise. In the case of this particular product, you don't really hear a sonic boom from it.
Is it a can of compressed air?
Give that man a gold star. It is canned air. I saw a YouTube, and when I first turned it on, I said to myself, how is this guy going to prove this? And it was a fascinating YouTube, surprisingly. There is a phenomena of turbulence, gas turbulence, that only occurs at supersonic speeds called, what is it called again? Diamonds, something diamonds, stress diamonds or something, I forget. But anyway, it produces a very strange distortion and turbulence in the air. That produces a series of diamond-shaped distortions. And he took out a canned ear and set up a camera and set up the light right and shock diamonds. And he photographed shock diamonds coming from the exhaust of the canned ear. So canned ear does, for most of its life, until it's really empty or very cold, operates at supersonic speeds.
Well, Max, you took it away. What a man.
Oh, you guys are going to make me blush. But that was a good one, because to be honest, I actually don't own a mechanical breath hair, funny enough. But I was thinking, like, what is that? What could that possibly be? That's relatively common, and there's a shot in the dark, but I'm glad it worked. That's really interesting, though. Very interesting.
Yeah, that's the type of questions that I ask the guys over at Limark. They're very few and far between. The type of puzzles that I do here is somewhat far easier to scoop up. They're the type of questions you get on exams. Whereas the Limark variety is more novel, if you will. But I'm glad you guessed it. The guys over at Limark, the closest I could get people to come up with was, someone finally mentioned an aerosol can. So it's not quite an aerosol can, because it uses the propellant to propel liquids, which kind of slows the whole flow down and screws up the hypersonic speeds. So aerosol wasn't the correct answer, but I figured it was close enough, and they were throwing out all kinds of silly answers after a bit of fatigue. So I gave it to the guy. So you did very, very well. You want to go on with the regular TechNet puzzle, since I warmed you up with the Limark TechNet puzzle?
Yes, please, because that's the one I was reading, and I wasn't sure what the answer was going to be.
Okay. The question is, a long open wire twin feeder is feeding a dipole with a 20-meter signal. At a particular time and location on the feeder, on the transmission line, the RF voltage is zero. Where else on the feeder at that time will the RF voltage also be zero? And for the sake of simplifying things, assume the velocity factor of this twin feeder transmission line is 1.0. It's perfect. Transmission lines don't have velocity factors of 1.0, but for the sake of this question, assume it's 1.0. So you have four choices. A is at a distance of 5 meters further along the transmission line. B is at a distance of 15 meters further along the transmission line. C is at a distance of 10 meters along the transmission line. And D is at any distance further along the transmission line. So that's your choice, A, B, C, or D. It's either 5 meters away, 15 meters away, 10 meters away, or any distance further on.
I want to say C, 10 meters, but I am not sure I really understand the
way. Away, which should be another zero crossing point, but let's see if I'm right.
I'm not sure, William, what your answer was. Which was your answer, A, B, C, or D?
C, 10 meters.
Okay, you are both right. A 20-meter signal is a radio wave that is 20 meters long. And each cycle in a radio wave hits the null point twice. So it has two null points every 20 meters, and it has, therefore, one node every 10 meters, which is the answer that is C. So you're both right. It's at a distance of 10 meters further along the transmission line. Congratulations.
Looks like you're winning, Max. You got 20 points.
Ooh. Well, yeah, winning for sure. Thanks, Roy. That's fun. One quick thing, and then I gotta jump off one more thing and go to a long day. I did start the process of creating a Discord server for our purposes. I was just curious, do we have a Kings County Radio Club icon, or what's it called? Any kind of picture I can use for the purposes of the icons and the
Well, we have the image of our patch. We have the image of our QSL card. Those sort of things. I would not suggest the banner of our website, which is basically, I think, the island of Manhattan. But we have those others.
Yeah, I can definitely, I think using the banner, not the banner, the image of the patch should be good. Again, it's on the website, you can just grab it there, unless you have a better version than me. Just looking for some materials I can use to configure the Discord server. I'll send you the info once I do that, so you can have access to it all.
Okay, very good. I think I'd send you what I got, but probably what I have is what I dumped onto the front page at the bottom. I think there's two versions. There's the image I mocked up, and there's a picture that the manufacturer took when he sent it to me, I think. So you have a graphic version, and you have a real-life version of the patch. And they're big enough that if you shrink them down, they probably will survive. So if you need another version of it, let me know.
That sounds good. I'll just grab it off the website. If it doesn't look great, I will let you know. Perfect. All right. I am beating Buckley in time.
Okay. Very good. Well, thank you. Thank you, Maxim, for joining us, for participating. It's much better to have three than two, and much better to have two than one.
And Roy, as always, appreciate everything you do. Well, you said earlier, the TechNet and the 10-meter net and the Echo Link that I'm currently using and abusing. Appreciate all you do.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be of service to the club. And, you know, it is, sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't work out. You know, we were talking earlier before you joined us. William mentioned the Discord server. Just on the level of usage, I will be fascinated to see how it works out. You know, we tried the forums and that wasn't terribly successful, but we had some activity at the very, very beginning, and I kind of hovered over it. If anyone wrote anything, I responded back so that they didn't feel orphaned. And yet, you know, you give people just a little bit of time, and they seem to forget these things. But I wish us all good luck with the Discord server. It'll be interesting to see. It's a very powerful technology. You can do so many different things that, unfortunately, I tend to think we're not going to be doing. But we can try, and we can see what we get away with.
Well, we can try and provide the tools and the access people the things they want and do what happens. We'll see how it goes. Well, I bid you adieu. Have a good night, and I will see you soon.
Okay, very good, Maxim. 73, I have pleasant dreams, sleep well, and we'll talk to you down the line.
Hey, Roy, maybe we ought to find out if anybody else is out there. Got a question for you.
Yeah, it's almost like you were reading my mind. That's what I was thinking. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy. I am the net control operator for this, the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. We are here on the second and fourth Wednesday of each and every month, starting at 9 p.m. To take your questions or to chat about some technical topics related to amateur radio and such. If anyone out there has any questions or comments or topics for discussion, please hit that push to talk and say hello. Now, golly gosh, who would have thunk it? By the way, William, I don't know if you appreciate this, but this entire net has, for all intents and purposes, been going on Echolink. I mean, we're linking it to the repeater so people listening in can hear. But you, Maxim, and as just as well myself, are kind of got a foot in the Echolink node. William, did I lose you?
Yeah, hi, Roy. I stepped away from the radio. What did you say?
I just wanted to point out that tonight we pretty much did all of our efforts through Echolink, because you and Maxim were going through Echolink, and I got one foot in Echolink and the other foot on the radio. So we've been kind of having this entire net on the Echolink, but it's just been linked up to our repeater through my radio.
Yeah, I think that's really cool that we can do that, because I also was trying out on the 10-meter net listening to you guys. I can hear, you know, better listening on the radio, on the cell phone, you know, on the stream, better than I get reception sometimes. So anyway, I think it's pretty cool to be able to have multiple ways of getting in and out of the repeater.
Yep, I agree. In the case of the audio stream, you're basically listening to the reception that I hear in my shack, because it's a direct stream from my shack. So, of course, you probably hear me best, because there's no RF going between us. But the other people is how I receive them, with, you know, adjusting the gain and playing around with the noise in the background and such. So that sort of gives you a good indication of what I got to kind of decode. There are some people, unfortunately, where All I can pull out of it is the cadence of their voice without any of the information. So I know who's talking, but that's about all I know.
Yeah, it seems like that's the way you can hear me on the 10 meter net, so sorry about that. But the other day it was pretty good, and what happened was that one of the poles of the dipole fell over on the roof, and that actually, maybe that was a better signal. I don't know. So I'm going to try at some point folding it over again and seeing if that really does make any difference or if it was just a fluke day.
Yeah, give it a try. I mean, part of this hobby is experimentation. Can't really experiment with surface mount discrete components in your radio. So you can fool around with your antenna. It's just bits of wire and such. And you never know what you'll discover.
Yeah, anyway, looking forward to more fun later. It doesn't look like there's anybody else out there wanting any technical questions. So here we are, all dressed up, and nobody's coming to the dance.
Well, unfortunately, I'm kind of used to that by now. It's been a kind of quiet season since about the fall, actually even before the fall. So I don't know. I joke occasionally and say that everyone in Brooklyn knows everything so that they don't have to ask. But I don't know. It's a shame. It's a service we offer. It's nice when people take us up on it. It's not so nice when people don't. But, you know, we try.
Well, maybe everybody in Brooklyn has forgot more than they know because, you know, it used to be our slogan was forget about it.
Well, I don't know. My neighborhood, it wasn't quite that. Although, it's a very pleasant neighborhood. It's about 50% Jewish people, 50% Italian people. So there was a little bit of forget about it, but not a heck of a lot. So, I don't know. It's, you know, Brooklyn has bred Nobel Prize winners. New York City in general has had a ridiculous number of very smart people who went out and changed the world while we stayed in the metropolitan area and did what we could. It sounded like you gave your fan third party to transmit.
I don't know about that. I thought of a question and then I forgot it. So anyway, stupid me. Anyway, so I just have a little cold tonight. So I think I'm going to go and get off the radio and do a little hot soup and see how things are tomorrow. But anyway, thanks a lot for hosting the TechNet and happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you very much, William. I do appreciate you popping up and being our co-host because Bob got himself a Valentine's gig, so he's making money tonight. So I thank you very much. I hope you feel better real soon. Stay safe, be well, and we'll talk to you down the line.
Yeah, 73. It was fun checking in with you from the seaport, but maybe running around in the cold didn't do me any good. So. Anyway, I'll say goodnight, 73. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Okay, no. This net has been brought to you by the Kings County Radio Club. Our club is an ARRL-affiliated club based in Brooklyn, New York, and we meet on the first Wednesday of each and every month. Our next meeting will be March 6th, which will be held by teleconference. Club members will be emailed with details of logging into the meeting. Non-members wishing to join a general club meeting can email me, AC2GS, with some form of identification for the required link. Although our meetings informally begin at 7 p.m., our formal regular general meeting starts at 8 p.m. and continues until anywhere from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m., depending upon the number of points that need to be covered. We have a weekly 2-meter club net on every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. on this repeater. This technical net meets on the second and fourth Wednesdays of each and every month at 9 p.m. We also sponsor a 10-meter net every Sunday morning at 11 o'clock a.m. on 28.380 upper sideband. We offer an audio stream of our KC2RC repeater on the internet net as well as our 10-meter net. You just type into your browser stream.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club. And as always, an application is readily available on our club website. If you would like to contact the host of this technical net, simply address your email to tech@kc2rc.com. We maintain an active website at www.kingscountyradioclub.com or www.kc2rc.com, which offers archives of this technical net, amateur radio news, original articles, and technical forums. Please visit our website and participate. Our website hosting services were generously donated by the local Brooklyn-based web hosting company, Three Aliens Web Hosting, who we would like to thank. As the great philosopher Jimi Hendrix once said, knowledge speaks, but wisdom listens. So try to listen a lot more and talk a lot less. It's time to roll this all up and shut it down for now. But we'll be back to do this all over again on March 27th. And you're welcome to join us. Thanks to all the people that participated tonight, especially William, AC2ZB. Without you guys, I'd just be talking to myself. I think I kind of got the date of our next session wrong. It's February 28th, I think. Yeah. Anyway, everyone who's listening, I don't know if that's anyone. Be well, stay safe. This is AC2GS, and I am clear.